This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 7th of December, 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 7th of December, 2012. Which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. Your readers today are Michael Wyard.
Hello.
Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, this week's announcements, we start with What's On. Now, there are a few Christmas musical events on. And also, of course, there's the Christmas market in Winchester in the inner close of the cathedral. And that's running from now until the 23rd of December. There's over 100 stalls and chalets, and it's open from 10 a.m. every day. So if you want to visit the Christmas market, you can from now till the 23rd of December. Concert-wise, in Winchester Cathedral, there's the Lord Lieutenant's Carol Concert, and that's next Friday, the 14th of December, at 7 p.m. The carols are by the Cathedral Choir, with readings, and it's presented by Alan Titchmarsh. For more information and tickets, telephone 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And in Romsey Abbey the same evening, Friday the 14th of December, there's a Feast of Christmas Music. And this is Handel's Messiah Part 1. It's at 7:30 p.m. in Romsey Abbey. And for tickets, telephone the Tourist Information Office on 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. And if you would like to go to the Brooks Centre on Saturday the 15th of December, the Wainfleet Singers are performing, and that's in aid of leukemia and lymphoma research. And that's from 10:30 a.m. till 12 noon in the Brooks Centre. There's carols and Christmas music. So more information on that one, 01962 869 352. 01962 869 352. And finally, next week at the cinema, the Everyman Cinema in Winchester, you've got a choice. Skyfall, the James Bond movie, Great Expectations, Silver Linings Playbook, and Argo. And those are the four films on next week. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 7th of December at 7:56 a.m. and begins at 4 p.m. And on Wednesday the 12th of December, it ends at 8:01 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. And there's a note in your wallet giving you that contact detail. Now, the main headlines this week: maternity services at RHCH under threat, heroes homecoming, so glad to be home as thousands pay tribute, and Red Cross to close headquarters in Winchester. So, Michael, could we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Right. Winchester's maternity unit could be downsized as part of the plans for a new emergency hospital north of the city, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which now runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, is considering moving consultant-led maternity care for women with high-risk pregnancies to the planned new £70 million centre. Other proposals include transferring care of critically ill children there, including a neonatal or the special care baby unit. This raises the prospect of maternity services at the RHCH and Basingstoke Hospital becoming midwife-led, although trust chiefs have refused to confirm or deny this, saying they are still working out the details. Health chiefs say changes are needed to ensure choice for pregnant women, while keeping services safe, financially viable, and meeting national standards. Other proposals include moving pathology services such as blood and tissue testing to a central warehouse with smaller hot hubs for urgent tests. Dr. Andrew Bishop, Chief Medical Officer for HSFT, revealed the proposed shake-up of maternity services during a presentation on the new emergency hospital to the County Council's Health Overview and Scrutiny Committee last week. As previously reported, the new critical treatment hospital would treat patients suffering from major trauma injuries, heart attacks, strokes, and other emergencies. Most would arrive by blue light ambulance or helicopter. A new £19 million cancer centre will operate from the same site. It would only be the second purpose-built hospital to specialise in emergency care in the country, with the first in Northumberland still to be built. Most patients would continue to be treated at the RHCS and Basingstoke hospitals, including planned surgery and outpatients. A and E departments at Basingstoke and Winchester will treat less serious emergencies. Andover War Memorial Hospital already has a minor injuries unit and a midwife-led unit for straightforward natural births. County Councillor Frinette Dickens, who represents Winchester Westgate, asked if consultant-led maternity care would remain at Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals. She also raised concerns about transport for relatives visiting patients at the new hospital. Dr. Bishop said the Trust would provide or facilitate transport. He said 10% of women wanted to give birth at home, 50% without doctors, while 40% needed or opted to have lots of machines and medical care. Dr. Bishop said the new critical treatment centre would have consultants on site 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He admitted there was some fudge in his answer, but he didn't want maternity services to become a war zone. Dr. Bishop said the new model of care was a work in progress and it was important to develop services consensually with GPs and councillors. Commenting on the proposals, Winchester's MP, Steve Bryan, said he and his wife, Susie, knew from personal experience the importance of obstetric-led services at the RHCS. Royal Hampshire County Hospital, that should be. The father of two said, "I never miss an opportunity to support improved health outcomes in the area, but the Trust are acutely aware, for me, that goes in hand with high-quality outpatient services, emergency care, and the full range of maternity provision at the RHCH. The Trust still has to secure a site for the new critical treatment hospital, but is looking in an area of land encircled by the M3, the A34 and the A303.
Heroes homecoming. So glad to be home as thousands pay tribute. Thousands of people crowded the streets of Winchester to welcome home heroes on Monday. Around 300 soldiers from the King's Royal Hussars, Hampshire's Cavalry Regiment, marched down the High Street to applause from local people. And there was a royal welcome too, as Prince Michael of Kent, the Queen's cousin and regimental senior colonel, saluted the troops alongside the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson. The soldiers had returned from a successful six-month operation in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Corporal Terry Reimer, 31, who grew up in Locks Heath, Fareham, said, For me, the main feeling today is a massive sense of pride and relief that we are back home safe. It's a great feeling to march through Winchester and see so much support from the public. I did my Phase 1 training nearby at Sir John Moore Barracks in Littleton, so it's a trip down memory lane for me. I drove past at lunchtime and felt a little shudder. I'm happy we had a very successful operation. My main job was working with the Afghan Army, mentoring and training them, and we made good progress, and I feel they are near enough ready to take responsibility for their own country. I hope that means I won't be going back after I've done 2 tours already. Trooper Robert Winchester, 22, of Horton Heath, Eastleigh, said, "I'm very excited to be here, and I have lots of family and friends here today to support me. I was sent care packages from friends and family when I was over there, and from complete strangers too, so this support means so much to me. It was a great day for families of soldiers too, particularly Janet Lawrence from Lancashire, mother to 23-year-old twins Sam and John in the regiment. She said, 'I feel joy that my sons have come home safe and sound, but also sadness for the soldiers injured and killed in Afghanistan.' You cannot forget that some families have not got a joyous homecoming to celebrate." Speaking before the march, Commanding Officer Lieutenant Colonel Alex Potts said, "This is our homecoming parade and means we can enjoy public affection, and I know the good people of Winchester will give us a great response." After the parade, the soldiers attended a carol and thanksgiving service in Winchester Cathedral. And accompanying this article, we have quite a few rather good coloured photographs, especially a very large one showing these men marching down High Street.
Red Cross to close HQ in Winchester. Museum goes too in switch to Portsmouth. The Red Cross for Hampshire is closing its Winchester headquarters and museum to move to new offices in Portsmouth and Eastleigh. Its Balfour Museum, which opened in 1994, has seen a fall in visitor numbers, said the charity. Currently shut to visitors, the museum will officially close on December the 31st. Originally, it was based in the headquarters in Wick before moving to Winnell in 2004. Colin Brown, Red Cross Operations Director for the Hampshire, Isle of Wight and Surrey area, said that while much treasured by the organisation, the museum had not maintained a high public profile or visitor numbers. Mr Brown said the decision was made prior to the decisions to move other services. However, the knowledge that moving was likely sooner rather than later led to agreement with the Balfour Historic Museum Trust to close this year. The museum displayed items from the Hampshire Red Cross branch, including archive material, photographs and medals. It was set up by the long-running Hampshire branch director Elizabeth Balfour, who financed the museum from the beginning and continued to do so after her death in 1998 through the Balfour Historic Museum Trust.
Is coming. The processions around the church during the service add to the drama of the search. Indeed, this service ends with some quiet chanting as the choir moves to the far east of the building, the place from which the sun will rise, to sing, "Don't fear and be dismayed, salvation is on the way." Unfortunately, this year, those distant strains were drowned in the hubbub around. Saturday nights are bound to be busy. Perhaps we could have done more to turn down the music on the skating rink. But actually, the greatest component of the noise was the sheer throng of humanity happily going by, oblivious. Being aware of the tremendously hard work of the choir and the high expectations of the congregation, I was disappointed that this clash of sounds had happened. But perhaps it was saying something important about the sort of hope the church can offer in today's world. Our world is a marketplace of faiths and philosophies of life, including those in which shopping is central. No message of hope will be welcome in this market if it tries to drown out all other voices. The most any one organisation can hope for is some respectful space in the midst of the throng. Many people will ignore whatever is being offered. Those who are searching may take up the invitation. Perhaps the most powerful spokesman of Advent was John the Baptist. He saw himself as a voice crying in the wilderness. Hardly ideal conditions for drumming up support for his cause. And yet, we are told, the crowds came out to meet him, not because his voice was louder than anyone else's, but because it was distinct and had integrity. Today's church has to get used to being in the marketplace. In the longer term, this pressure will purify its own voice and drive it back to living more simply and distinctively, like John the Baptist. And that was by Canon Rowley Ream.
Thank you, Shirley. Now we move on to letters to the editor. And Michael's going to start us off. Michael.
This letter comes from Graham Cranmer, and he lives in Abbotstone in Allsford. Who authorised this police panel is the heading of the letter. Sir, so the undemocratic and somewhat secretive police authority has been abolished and replaced by the elected police and crime commissioner. He is directly accountable to the electorate for overseeing the work of the police, including responsibility for hiring and firing the chief constable. He is the person to whom we can address our concerns about crime and safety, because not only is he accessible, indeed, we might be able to buttonhole him in the high street, but he is also the person to whom who should get things done, changed, improved. It's a new era in decision-making in policing, as Councillor David Stewart pointed out, and that was in the letters in November the 19th. But hold on. What is this police and crime panel of which he is chairman? Did our PCC Simon Hayes know he was going to be supported, questioned and scrutinised by this panel, described as a mechanism for providing an independent checks and balances, challenges to the work of the commissioner? Councillor Stewart is certainly claiming for his panel responsibility to local communities for their safety and security. Who set up this panel? Who is on it? How did they get there? How, if we should want, can we get rid of them? Does membership qualify for another special responsibility allowance? I don't recall anything about this panel in the run-up to the PCC election. Graham Cranmer.
And now this one is headed Attacks on NHS So Demoralising, and it's written by Connor Morris. Sir, the Care Quality Commission has published its biggest ever report into standards of care across the healthcare sector, only a day after the Patients Association published its dossier highlighting 13 cases of appalling care suffered by patients at the hands of the NHS. These two publications sparked newspaper headlines vilifying nurses and carers and suggesting that they have lost their compassion, or worse still, have become lazy and allowed standards to slip. The reality is that most nurses and carers are working harder than ever to provide the highest standards of care. Imagine working to save lives every day in an environment where people around you are in pain and suffering, and where you are stretched to the limit thanks to the government-imposed budget cuts and staff shortages. Now imagine doing all that, only to find your profession being regularly attacked from all sides. This is what Britain's nurses face. I cannot imagine how demoralising that must be. The CQC and the Patients Association are very important organisations, and both are right to highlight examples of poor care. But it would be nice to see them also highlight the exemplary care experienced by most NHS patients. The press won't do it because it doesn't sell newspapers, but these organisations could. Yet where is the dossier containing the many millions of examples of excellent care and satisfied patients? Or was that one too long to publish? Most people do not understand the skill needed to be a nurse, nor do they understand just how hard a job it is. I admire anyone prepared to take that on. It is sad to see these people work so hard, day in and day out, only to then see them vilified. If we are not careful, there will be a sharp decline in the number of people wanting to enter nursing, because at the moment it would appear that they cannot do anything right. Connor Morris, Queen's Road, Winchester.
The next letter is written by Tim Biddleston, and it's headed, "How soon before overheads expand, sir?" I note with interest that Jane Kennedy, recently appointed Commissioner of Police for Merseyside, is to recruit a chief executive to ensure her strategies and vision are realised, while John Murphy, chief constable for the area, must be wondering what then is his job, the rest of us will be thinking, here we go again. One unproductive overhead, appointed, by the way, against the wishes of the general masses, leads to the immediate appointment of another unproductive overhead, and so on. I guess in seeking this placement, Jane is developing a strategy to address a complete lack of any idea of what to do. By recruiting someone else with absolutely no idea, she has at least someone to fire when they fail to do anything. Is Simon Hayes going to be doing the same? It's only a matter of time before we see ads for strategists, consultants, accountants, et al. Meanwhile, the government starves the institution of the very resources to actually do the work. Just how much is it going to cost, and how many policemen does it add up to? No wonder we can't find officers to take on the job of chief constable. Within industry, this is known as flooding a board, a tactic designed to stagnate a company's ability to operate. See any resemblance yet? UKIP should adopt a bat phone as their campaign logo. The irony will not be lost on us. The letter is from Tim Biddleston, Main Road, Abbotsworthy.
Our next letter is from Councillor Roy Perry, who's the HCC Executive Lead Member on Children's Services, and says school location will minimise traffic. So regarding the new primary provision at the Westgate School, Winchester, I want to reassure your readers that all the appropriate and necessary steps are being taken to carefully plan for this important development. The decision to expand the Westgate School was taken following extensive consultation and a detailed analysis of where the children who need this school live. We now must submit a planning application, which will include a new travel plan to demonstrate how journeys should be managed. Additional journeys are inevitable, because the extra number of children must go to school somewhere. But by placing the new school in the closest available site, we've sought to minimise traffic. It's proposed to stagger the start and finish times of pupils. We're considering the creation of a drop-off bay on Chilbolton Avenue to ease the need for cars to go into Cheriton Road, and reinstatement of a footpath along the Westgate boundary to create a safer route for walking. We'll also encourage non-car transport including reward schemes for walking and cycling. Green Lane is not adopted and is currently not recorded as a public footpath on the right-of-way map. However, our proposals mean it will be open outside of school hours. Hampshire County Council must determine planning applications for schools following the same statutory consultation and publicity requirements as all local planning authorities. The application will be decided by the regulatory committee, which is cross-party and independent. The meetings are public, and all representations and consultee responses are made available to the committee. The timescale for delivery is tight, but we are confident it can be achieved, and a great new educational provision will be available for the increasing number of children in Winchester. And that was by Councillor Roy Perry, Hampshire County Council.
This next letter comes from Peter Moore, who lives in Allison Way, Oram's Arbour in Winchester. And it's headed, "It's fundamental. Our country is full." Sir, gloomy news in your columns, Chronicle, November the 29th, for those who love the city. Barton Farm means 2,000 homes, presumably 8,000 plus people. Pressure on roads, transport, parking, doctors, hospitals, schools, policing, Barton Farm 2, all as gloomily foretold, would multiply the strain on all these resources. There's a Hampshire-wide shortfall of primary school places now, as Joseph Curtis told us in last week's issue. Against this local backdrop comes the news that United Kingdom net migration is down to a mere 183,000 in the latest annual figures. What does that mean in 1 year to the pressure on roads, transport, parking, doctors, hospitals, schools and policing across the country? When will our elected representatives start tackling the fundamental problem? Our country is full. We need them to promote zero net migration, backed by an intelligent programme to encourage no more than 2 children per family. Fail, and before too long, we will no longer recognise the city or the country we love. That's from Peter Moore.
And this one from Freddie Crabb of Ossilbury is headed, "Police on streets is far better value." Sir, Councillor Stewart's letter, Chronicle, November 29th, was frightening. The concept of police under political control is an anathema. His assurance is, leave it to us, really. He also asserts failure of political nominees is anti-democratic. Oh, so who actually favours political control of policing? Surely the public have unwittingly and unintentionally been given the opportunity to have direct influence on policing through their PCC vote. Councillor Stewart has his own plan. That political nominees failed is, in my view, a huge success. Power has been returned to the people. They must retain it by backing elected PCCs and ensuring they do not have their authority usurped by unelected, self-appointed alternatives with their own agenda. Making council tax savings by a cull of police committees would be healthy. Could the PCC ask the police to check for waste of public money? Surely police on streets is much better value than councillors talking about policing. The public can tell their PCC directly what their needs are, instead of councillors theorising about it. Freddie Crabb, Hensting Lane, Ossilbury.
The next letter is from Elizabeth Thorne, and it's headed, "No tinkering, time for an underpass." Sir, recent correspondence and articles referred to the proposed alterations to the roundabout at Junction 9 on the M3 at Winnall. It was quite obvious that when first built it was poorly designed, probably through unwillingness to spend sufficient money. It needed and needs an underpass whereby traffic driving north on the M3 but wishing to get onto the A34 is siphoned off beforehand so it never reaches the roundabout. To put one in now is going to be disruptive, but it has to be done sometime, so better now than later, when traffic and costs will be even greater. Just to tinker with the present layout is a waste of time and money. At last Saturday's Wynn ACC meeting Rebarton Farm, I was told the Andover Road is to be changed and rerouted, so fewer drivers will wish to use it. In the real world, that means more traffic using the already crowded Stockbridge Road and A34, reinforcing what I have said above. That was from Elizabeth Thorne of Airby Road, Winchester.
And the last letter, special trip wasted by library closure, says Pat Thornhill. So I also made a trip to the library in Winchester, letters November the 29th, and was very surprised to see it shut with no notice. Later that day, while guiding in the cathedral, I was asked to help a PhD textile student from Manchester who'd made a special trip to Winchester in order to see the large work by Alice Kettle on permanent display in the library. Having checked before setting off that the library was open, she was very annoyed not to be able to view this major work. Alice Kettle had spoken to her year during their MA course, and she felt that her work was inspiring. Luckily, I was able to show her Alice Kettle in the cathedral, the beautiful altar frontal in the Holy Sepulchre Chapel, and describe the library's impressive piece of work for her. Could not the library managers have staggered their staff training to allow the service to remain open and prevented wasted, and in this case expensive, journeys? And that letter was from Pat Thornhill, Barley Down Drive, Winchester. And don't forget that if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. And now we move on to historical items, and Michael's going to take us back in time.
Yes, right back 200 years to 1812. Died on Sunday last, aged 70 years, in Southampton, Mr. William Lakeland, an officer in the excise, a most eccentric character. This person died worth £4,000, all funded property. He lived so very abstemious as to deprive himself of the common necessaries of life. He died without making a will, often observing that he had no relative in the world, and that his property, at his decease, should devolve into the hands of the English government under which he lived.
And this one is 100 years ago, of 1912. The Great Western Railway Company announces that arrangements have been made for the collection and prompt delivery of Christmas parcels in all the principal towns on their system. The charges for conveyance for short distances are lower than those by parcel post. During the Christmas season, all parcels should be fully and legibly addressed and the address cards firmly attached. As a precaution, a duplicate label should be enclosed in the event of the outside label becoming detached or defaced. And then we have a scheme for the electrical working of several of the suburban lines of the London and South Western Railway has been drawn up and will be submitted to the board for adoption. The scheme, involves the building of a large powerhouse. The work will, it is expected, begin early in the spring of 1913 and take 2 years.
And now two items from 50 years ago, that's 1962. For the first time in years, Winchester City Council tenants will not have to face a rent rise next April. With the present financial year yielding a surplus of £16,195 against an estimate of £4,630, the Estates Committee has been able to recommend no change, a move which met with unanimous approval at Wednesday's meeting. The unfailing popularity of Shakespeare's comedies ensured success for girls of Danemark School, Winchester, with Thursday's presentation of Twelfth Night, produced by Mr. P. James, with the assistance of staff, pupils and the students of King Alfred's College. The production enjoyed a well-merited appreciation from a small but enthusiastic audience. With a strong cast portraying some of Shakespeare's best-loved characters, the play owed much to the superb scenic and lighting effects, which gave the story an unexpected lustre.
And from 25 years ago, 1987, two items. Firstly, Winchester City Council is confident it can make a start on building more than 100 houses next year, provided it has enough land. The first are expected to be built at the Valley Stanmore in the city. The Housing Committee instructed officers to start on the preliminary design work for this development when it met on Wednesday night. It also decided to investigate the possibility of building further homes next year in Chesil Street and Claylands in Bishop's Waltham and at Doctors Lane, West Meon. And the second item, John Brown, MP for Winchester and Alton, yesterday, Thursday, introduced a bill in the House of Commons to tighten the law against cruelty to animals. The Protection of Animals Amendments Bill is due to receive its second reading on December the 11th. Maximum penalties for the main offences of cruelty to animals were doubled earlier this year, a move fully supported by the MP. And now we move on to Chronicle comment, Michael.
Right. I notice at the top of here, Hampshire Chronicle, it says serving the community for 240 years, which came as a surprise to me. Keep these vital services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Just a month ago, this newspaper welcomed the news that a new £70 million hospital and state-of-the-art cancer centre was set to be built north of Winchester. At the same time, we stated that the new hospital should not replace or diminish existing services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Now we can reveal that the maternity unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital could be downgraded as part of a review into maternity services across existing sites in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover. It could lead to consultant-led maternity care for women with high-risk pregnancies being transferred to the new hospital. This raises the prospect of maternity services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital becoming midwife-led. When pressed by this newspaper, trust chiefs refused to confirm or deny that this could happen. It is only right that the Health Trust reviews any changes needed to ensure choice for pregnant women, while keeping services safe, financially viable, and meeting national standards. But we reiterate that everything must be done to ensure that the RHCH keeps a full range of maternity services, including consultant-led care to perform procedures such as caesareans or forceps deliveries.
And now we move on to first person, Peter.
Oh, yes. First person today is written by George Hayter. And it's headed when life is an uphill struggle. In Winchester, life can seem like an uphill struggle. Everywhere there seems to be a hill to climb. Not surprising for a town which nestles in the valley of the Itchen, hemmed in by the downs on both sides. Shoppers heading home after a dose of retail therapy in the city centre face a climb of around 200 feet if they live in an outer suburb like Badger Farm. Some will trudge home on foot, but others, perhaps laden with shopping bags, will opt for the bus or taxi. The same sort of choice faces savers and investors in their financial planning. The uphill struggle for them is not a homeward journey with shopping, but more likely a 40-year progress towards comfort in retirement. In recent years, that progress has become more difficult, steeper if you like, because inflation has been higher than interest rates. With energy prices rising, steep inflation looks like being with us into the longer term, as do the lethargic interest rates paid on savings accounts. I mentioned the bus, a way of getting up the hill quicker. It may be able to go faster than you can walk, but sometimes there can be frustrating problems. It can get stuck in that traffic queue that forms outside the hospital in Winchester. Occasionally, the bus breaks down, or more likely, it fails to turn up for ages while you're waiting in a chilly draught at the bus stop. The equivalent of a bus in financial planning terms is a stock market investment. There are different types, such as unit trusts and investment trusts. The best known category is individual shares or equities. Most of the time, stock market investments perform like buses. They don't get tired, they're powerful, and for years they keep making you more money than your savings accounts can. Shares don't get stuck in traffic, but they can let you down still. The companies that underpin them may stop making a profit or even go bust. Even at the best of times, the shares bus is a stop-start. 1 minute it's roaring ahead, then it's held up by a passenger fumble for change. It's a tricky choice for savers. Do you stick with the safe but painfully slow method of wealth creation represented by savings accounts with interest rates lower than inflation? Or do you risk the stock market with the chance of beating inflation, as well as the risk of losing some or even all of your money? Is it best to keep trudging or wait at the bus stop and hope the bus will turn up and give you an easy ride? If you've saved a few grand for the long term, it's often a good idea to have a proportion of it riding on the bus.
Thank you. Now we return to items of general news. Michael.
This one is the regular farming input for the newspaper called Farm Focus, written by Andrew Davis on a regular basis. And this one has the depressing heading of Prospects Already Poor for the Harvest of 2013. Whilst it might be a British trait to discuss, even complain about our weather, there has been some justification. As recently as the spring, we were deeply concerned about drought after 18 months of exceptionally dry weather. Then came the wettest summer for a century, with heavy rainfall into the autumn. As I write, there is a lull in the succession of low-pressure systems chasing each other across the Atlantic, but it may not last for long. Walking across a field of wheat a few weeks ago, I was amazed to see the extent of erosion. There were channels where heavy rainfall had washed the soil and seed down the hill, and an accumulation of silt with a thick mat of wheat at the bottom. This was in October, and is the worst erosion on the farm in living memory. The bad weather has had a major impact on farming, which will undoubtedly carry over into food supplies and prices in the months to come. I spoke to an agronomist friend, Mick Robinson, after a meeting with colleagues, and they estimate that 80% of oilseed rape acreage this autumn has been planted, and of that, no more than half will come to harvest. Ideally, rape is sown before the end of August and grown after winter barley to allow time to prepare a seed bed. Where this has occurred this year, the rape looks in good shape. However, Winter barley is not very profitable and little is grown. Rather, farmers plant rape after winter wheat. But this posed real problems this year with a wet, late harvest. Much of the seed was muddled late into a poor, wet seed bed, and some never sown at all. Many fields are waterlogged and the seed has rotted, or where it has germinated, has been eaten by flea beetle or slugs. With sodden land, it has not been possible to apply any chemicals. Winter wheat has fared little better. ADAS estimates that 80% of the planned area has been drilled, but Mick and his colleagues put it nearer 60%. Seeds need oxygen to germinate, shoots and roots to grow, but there's little or no air in the waterlogged soils. Seed is rotting in the ground or where it has managed to germinate, dying from lack of oxygen or eaten by slugs, of which there are millions. What can be done with the seed if it's not planted? Dressed with a chemical? It cannot be used for any other purpose. It could be held over to next autumn, but germination will suffer, and the only other solution is to send it for landfill. An expensive and unattractive option. Even where crops have survived, many soils have poor structure and are likely to limit growth. Putting all this together, prospects at this stage for next summer's harvest are grim, perhaps the worst for many years. One farmer friend told me he has yet to harvest his grain maize. His autumn crop are underwater, and his hops yielded well, but the quality was poor. Considering his other main enterprise, his pigs, hit by high feed prices, he has a reasonable excuse for feeling gloomy. It's highly likely food prices will rise in the coming months, and there may be shortages of some fruit and vegetables. Livestock farmers are no better off with high feed prices and a potential shortage of fodder. All in all, as Christmas approaches, it may be a little difficult to achieve the festive spirit this year.
Land near station in developers' sights. Developers are eyeing the area around Winchester Railway Station, a meeting heard. Unless civic chiefs draw up their own action plan soon, then public benefits from any development could be lost, councillors were told at the town forum. The land from the station to the cattle market is currently underused and ripe for redevelopment, said architect Paul Bulkley. It has a lot going for it from a developer's point of view, he said. It is an area of the city where there is the opportunity for change. It is largely owned by the city and county councils and Network Rail and is mainly car parks. Mr. Bulkley said that unless a plan is drawn up before planning applications come in, then the councils run the risk of losing gains to the public realm, such as developers paying for improvements to the street scene or for transport. Mr. Bulkley of Snug Projects, based in Jewellery Street, said the area was in a bowl, and so new buildings could be some seven stories high without imposing on the historic city centre. Several business developers are interested in building large offices aimed at attracting major firms. Mr. Bulkley was making a presentation on behalf of the civic activists, the City of Winchester Trust, and Green Campaigners Win ACC. Another stimulus for development will be the upgrading of railways in southern England. When the line from the Midlands through Oxford to Hampshire is electrified by 2019, that opens the prospect of an increase in passenger numbers to places like Winchester. In recent years, there have been several tentative plans for development, including a scheme for the redevelopment of the Territorial Army Base on Gladstone Street, houses on the Cattle Market car park, and the sale of the registry office by the County Council. In 2008, South West Trains proposed a multi-storey 384-space car park on its land, but dropped the idea in early 2009. Steve Tilbury, Corporate Director, Operations, told the meeting the City Council had been talking to the County Council about the Carfax, Gladstone Street and Register Office area. Developers have contacted the City Council expressing interest in acquiring land, he said. Councillor Fiona Mather pointed out that although considered relatively underused, it was used by railway commuters. There is currently inadequate parking for the station, she said. The area is regarded as blighted, but it is a blight that is not going to go away. With more development, there will be more demand for parking, not less. Councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "It is nice to have a presentation that reminds us that Winchester is not just a housing estate. It's a city and as such needs to provide service to people who live outside it and want to come in to work. A business portal inviting people to come in and do business here." Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said, "Development around the station would help attract information-based businesses to the city, such as IT or architects. Such development may be controversial, but Professor Turner added, "Winchester has a community that will complain about anything, given half a chance. But people realise we have got to keep young businesses in the city. We need career paths for people to start here and then stay." He added that he expected any car parks lost to be replaced by the building of multi-storey ones close to the station.
Council set to take on 1,000 apprentices. County Council leader announces five-year initiative. The leader of Hampshire County Council has announced plans to employ 1,000 apprentices over the next 5 years. Tory councillor Ken Thornber said the drive to get young adults working was probably the most exciting initiative we shall ever take. He also announced plans to award 10 university scholarships a year, 50 in total, to young people from poorer families. But a leading opposition councillor criticised the proposals as being part of a pre-election package. The new apprenticeships come after the council axed 1,500 jobs as part of a £100 million spending cut over the past 2 years. Speaking at the meeting of the full council in Winchester on Thursday, Councillor Thornber said, "We all know of the plight of our young people and the scarcity of jobs for them. I can now announce what is probably the most exciting initiative we shall ever take. Hampshire County Council will employ as apprentices 1,000 young people over the next 5 years as our contribution to reducing their unemployment." The council plans to employ 200 apprentices a year, aged 16 to 25. A report to Cabinet later this month will include more details, including costs. Funding will be in the budget for 2013-14. Councillor Thornber said the council would offer places to young people from a wide range of backgrounds, with all academic or vocational abilities. And it will continue to fund a special apprenticeship scheme for vulnerable care leavers, which has won praise from Ofsted. Councillor Keith House, leader of the Liberal Democrat opposition group, said the apprenticeship scheme was part of a pre-election package. Councillor House said, "This is 200 apprentices a year, not a big number in a county the size of Hampshire, But Liberal Democrats welcome all action to create jobs, especially from a council with a reputation for losing rather than creating jobs. Peter Terry, regional organiser for Unison in Hampshire, also cautiously welcomed the scheme, but wanted more details. The union boss said, "Generally, apprenticeships are something we welcome so long as young people are not being exploited and there is the prospect of full-time employment."
The next piece is fronted by a photograph of Mark Goulding in front of his stall at the Winchester Market, which is Winchester Coffee Roasters. And the letter is headed, "Coffee Stall Tradesman Told to Move by Starbucks." A Winchester market trader says he was forced to move his pitch following a complaint by corporate giant Starbucks. Mark Goulding, who runs Winchester Coffee Roasters, believes someone from the high street chain said they were unhappy with his position. The 48-year-old from Kingsworthy said, "Apparently Starbucks put in a complaint. The people that run the stalls phoned me one Thursday and I said, 'You're kidding me.' I couldn't believe it when I heard that I had to move." Mr. Goulding was moved 3 months ago and his pitch now looks in another direction. He feels he's lost a prime position facing outwards at the entrance to the run of the stalls. "I must admit, they've done a good job with the market here, but this was a bit of a shock as I've only been in business for 6 months. But what do you do? It's hard enough getting a stall," he said. However, Paul Lewis, owner of SMT, which manages the market, denied that there had been any formal complaint received, but did say a conversation took place during which a Starbucks manager expressed concern at the positioning of Mr. Goulding's stall. He said, "We had Mark outside Laura Ashley, but the Starbucks manager said he didn't like it." The comment was that it was actually facing Starbucks, just like we wouldn't put a sweet stall outside Thornton's, for example. So we moved him so he wasn't facing Starbucks. But Martin Jerams, manager of Starbucks, denied any knowledge of the situation. He said, "I'm the store manager, but I've never heard anything about this. I've not heard anything about it, and I've never even heard of Paul Lewis. Starbucks has been in the national news recently with controversy over its paying of tax in the UK."
Thieves burgle school. Thieves broke into a school and made off with hundreds of pounds in cash. The burglary took place in the early hours of last Thursday morning at Bishop's Waltham Infant School. The £450 stolen includes funds raised for Help for Heroes and improvements to the school. Staff have had to reassure the children aged between 4 and 7 who were frightened by the break-in. Janine Evans, the head teacher, said, "The children were very scared that someone had been in the school and done this. We have reassured them that these people are not going to come back to hurt them. We're very sad that someone has decided to do this at this time of year." The money included fundraising by the children and PTA. It was for Help for Heroes and said that on the bags. "We have lots of community events. We are an open, friendly school and it is very upsetting. It could be someone we have welcomed into our school." The burglars also stole the CCTV tapes that could identify them. The stolen haul also included savings for the staff Christmas party, which must now have been cancelled. PC Jonathan Earnshaw of Bishop's Waltham Police Station said, "This burglary has affected young children at the school and hard-working staff. I'd like to speak to anyone with information about this incident. I'd also like to hear from anyone who can help us identify 2 men who were seen smoking outside the school at around 9:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 28th. Anyone with information about the incident is asked to contact PC Earnshaw at Bishop's Waltham Police Station by phoning 101 or anonymously by calling Crime Stoppers on 0800 55 5111.
Book sheds light on city's rich Roman history. Secrets from Winchester's Roman history are revealed in a new book. The Roman Cemeteries and Suburbs of Winchester was launched by Mayor of Winchester Frank Pearson at a ceremony at Abbey House. It reports findings from a series of archaeological studies in Winchester from the 1970s and 1980s. Ken Qualman, archaeologist and one of the authors, said he was pleased to see it finished. "It's a pleasure to have such a big work published, but relieved because I was responsible for most of the excavations. I started the rescue unit in 1972, and I started to think that some of this would never see the light of day. These studies will be an invaluable resource for scholars, especially because of new techniques and studies like DNA research, which wasn't possible 30 years ago. The book is part of an ongoing series of the various finds in Winchester spanning various periods." Helen Rees, curator of archaeology for Winchester Museum Service, said, "This has worked out very well, and we have worked very closely with English Heritage, who have funded the project. Any profits from the book will go towards the next volume in our series, which is going to be about Roman and medieval pottery. The book costs £35 and is out now."
The next piece is headed by a photograph of police and sniffer dogs in the entrance to Winchester Station. And it's headed, "Sniffing Out Drugs at the Station." Police cracked down on the supply of drugs into Winchester by targeting the city's railway station. Hampshire police were out in force last Thursday on a joint drugs operation with British Transport Police. 12 officers, 6 from each force, were at the station with 2 passive sniffer dogs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. inspecting people at the gates. There were 12 stop and searches, with 2 street warnings given out for possession of cannabis. It was part of a wider month-long anti-drugs operation, with the station targeted based on intelligence that drugs were being brought into Winchester by train. PC Ian Dawson said, "Recently, we've had a good result in tackling the supply of drugs in and around Winchester, and on Thursday, we were acting on information we had been given on how the drugs are coming into the city. The operation is mainly to do with the supply of Class A drugs, but the type of drug makes no difference to the dogs. They used a Springer Spaniel and a Black Labrador so as not to intimidate the public." PC Dawson added, "These are passive dogs rather than the big Alsatians, and they are very well trained and easy to handle. The public were very good, and we explained what we were doing, and it all went very well." Sergeant Matt Flynn, who led the operation, said, "Thursday's operation has been a huge success. It demonstrates our commitment to preventing those who supply illegal drugs from using the rail network and from entering our city."
Hugh bides time over restaurant scheme. River Cottage says it is biding its time before consulting the public over its now controversial plans for a restaurant in Winchester city centre. Many people living in the Colebrook Street area are opposing the proposal by celebrity TV chef Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, pictured here in colour, for his third canteen and deli. As reported in the Hampshire Chronicle, a meeting at the Guild Hall last Monday was attended by around 50 people, with several raising concerns about noise pollution and traffic disruption. River Cottage has signed a lease with the City Council to take over Abbey Mill, the listed building that stands next to Abbey Gardens. In a statement, the Dorset-based business said, "River Cottage is really looking forward to being part of the community at Winchester and sharing our seasonal, local, organic and wild food offer." The council is dealing with the planning process for change of use on the building right now, and this means we are waiting until the right moment when we can fully connect with the community to talk to them about our intentions for the new canteen. River Cottage is fully committed to using local suppliers whenever possible, and so we really hope we can have a positive impact on the local community, not just in terms of jobs, but also additional trade for local food producers. But one resident who asked not to be named said River Cottage should already have been talking to residents. They have surrendered the initiative to the aunties needlessly. "I like the plans, but leaving it to the City Council to explain things is leaving a lot to be desired."
Hilltop Solar Energy Farm would affect heritage asset. A controversial scheme to set up a 20,000 solar panel energy farm near Stockbridge has been scuppered by councillors. Members of Test Valley Borough Council's Northern Planning Committee voted 17-1 to refuse the plans for 26 acres of arable farmland off Sombourne Park Road, southeast of the village. This was despite officers' recommendations to give the scheme the green light. Officers said the proposals would provide renewable energy, which would contribute to reducing climate change. However, councillors had serious concerns about the impact the proposed hilltop development would have on the National Trust-owned Stockbridge Down, and especially near Grade 2 listed Green Place, which was built in 1906 and designed as a holiday home by renowned architect and artist Malkay Hugh Bailey Scott. It later became the home of Sir Norman Hill and author J.B. Priestley's daughter Lady Wickham, who died in 2005. Overwallop ward member Tony Hope, who voted against the proposed development, said, "I just felt that this piece of productive land should be kept for agriculture rather than be covered in all these solar panels. Also, the site would be visible from viewpoints in and around Stockbridge, one of the Test Valley's jewels in its crown. It would also have a really compromised setting of the Grade 2 listed Green Place." Councillor Hope added, "I am yet to be convinced that solar panels are the answer to power production." Stockbridge Parish Council also criticised the scheme, fearing the proposals would have a significant detrimental impact on Green Place and other buildings of significant heritage interest. It also felt the proposed development would have a detrimental impact on the amenity of neighbouring properties and would be visible from other important sites and views, such as Danebury Ring, Iron Age Hill Fort near Stockbridge, Marsh Court Farm, Stockbridge, Houghton Down and stretches of the River Test. Planning officers received more than 20 letters and emails from objectors, some of whom fear the solar farm was a development on an industrial scale in the heart of the Test Valley, which would look completely out of place in the countryside. Some objectors also feared wildlife, including barn owls, brown hare, foxes and other birds and animals living on the site would be affected. However, Natural England, which was consulted about the scheme, raised no objection. The application was refused on the grounds the proposals would adversely affect the special character and appearance of Green Place, which is a designated heritage asset.
This piece is headed, "Councillor Won't Resign After Court Appearance." A parish councillor from a village near Winchester has been convicted of threatening behaviour at a meeting. Jerry Tull, who is 65 and is pictured here, pushed tables at Usselbury Parish Council on April the 16th, causing a projector to crash to the floor, magistrates heard. Tull, an agricultural contractor of Main Road, Usselbury, had denied threatening behaviour against Tony Manship, the parish council chairman, but he was convicted after a trial at Basingstoke Magistrates Court and given a 2-year conditional discharge and ordered to pay £500 towards prosecution costs. Following the verdict, Tull said he had no intention of resigning from the council. "I've had so much support from the village and will stay until the village doesn't want me," he said. "But I'm prepared to apologise at the next meeting. But in exchange, I would like guarantees that there will be changes to the way the council is run." Mr. Manship said Tull would only have been automatically disqualified from sitting on the council had he been jailed for 3 months or longer. He said, "The council's in a difficult position. He doesn't like to debate things. He likes to get his own way." The next elections for the parish council are in around 18 months' time, and Mr. Manship said he would review his own position nearer that time.
Beware of supermarket bank card con. Police are hunting thieves who use distraction techniques to steal bank cards in Winchester supermarkets. Over the past month, 3 victims have had cards stolen in Tesco in Winnall and Sainsbury's Badger Farm. The victims were approached by a man who picked up money from the floor, most often a £20 note, and claimed the victim had dropped it. On all occasions, the victims declined the money, but the offender was able to steal their cards while they were distracted. The offender in the first incident at Tesco was described as a white man, 5'11" tall, 5'1" tall, with white hair and wearing a long khaki coat with calf or ankle-length grey trousers and a pale blue headscarf in relation to the first Tesco theft. Another theft at Tesco involved a man of Spanish or Italian origin, aged 40, around 5'8", with slightly balding dark hair and wearing an open-neck white T-shirt with black trousers and a black top. The Sainsbury's offence involved a white man in his 50s, 5'5" tall, wearing a dark knee-length trench coat. PC Caroline Ballpit said, "It appears that on each occasion the offender has somehow managed to obtain the PIN of the stolen cards, possibly by watching the victims at the checkouts, before distracting them and taking their cards. I would advise shoppers to always cover their PIN completely when entering it and to place their bank cards in a secure location, preferably inside a wallet or purse, which is then zipped or fastened, and placed inside another bag or zipped pocket. If anyone is approached by someone using a similar technique, do not engage in conversation with them or allow them to get close to your personal belongings. Anyone with information should contact PC Ballpit at Winchester Police Station on 101 or call Crime Stoppers on 0800 55 5111.
Surveys to look into future of city sports provision. Winchester City Council is pressing ahead with surveys into whether River Park Leisure Centre should be repaired or replaced. The Council wants detailed reports on 3 key areas: an account of repair and maintenance work required over the next 10 years, analysis of the content, scope and costs of a replacement and a planning report on where a replacement could be built. Over the next 3 months, consultants are expected to speak to sports clubs, governing bodies and existing facilities to establish what provision is needed. The information must be reported back to the council by March the 29th. The cost of the surveys is around £50,000. Emma Back of Winchester Fit for the Future, a group campaigning for improved sports facilities in the city, said the council was taking too long to make a decision. She said, "I think this could be done sooner than March, and I would like to know why it will take so long. We've been talking about repairs at River Park for at least 6 years, and that is too long. The council ought to be able to make a decision in principle, so let's make that decision to build a new centre and then move on to where and what."
Couples renew their vows at Abbey. More than 100 couples made history by renewing their vows at the same time during a special service at Rumsey Abbey to mark Queen and Prince Philip's 65 years of marriage. All the couples, most of them from Hampshire, had been married 60 years or more, and this was the first time so many had gathered at the Abbey to retake their vows. Romsey's vicar, the Reverend Tim Sledge, co-organised the event with the Reverend Paul Burrows Gibson of St Sebastian's Community Church in Winchester. Mr Burrows Gibson preached that marriage was similar to the Queen's reign of dedicated service, but to each other. The Queen sent a telemessage congratulating the couples, which was read out during the service. There was also a celebratory cake-cutting ceremony towards the end. Reverend Sledge said, "It was such a lovely family occasion and a wonderful thing to do, both celebrating this Jubilee year, but also the long life and marriages of so many couples from around Hampshire."
The country house that was Mary Monarch's love nest. When King Charles wanted to take Nell Gwynn on a trip to the country, one of their favourite places was Abington, near Winchester. Described by William Cobbett as one of the very prettiest spots in the world, Abington is today still noted for its natural beauty and wildlife. According to the history books, the stunning property of Abington Park was where King Charles II spent a good deal of time while visiting this part of his kingdom. Here the king is said to have brought Nell when Christopher Wren was superintending the building of the great palace, which was to be the summer home for the royal court. There was to have been a street of gentlemen's houses linking the palace with Winchester Cathedral, but the scheme was never built. While waiting for Wren's plans to materialise, the king and his courtiers stayed at Abington as the guests of Sir George Bridges, who became the ruler's groom of the bedchamber, with a salary of £500 a year. It was during this period that the original Elizabethan house was enlarged and a great banqueting hall was built for the entertainment of the monarch and his friends. Nell Gwynn, it is evident, received the attention normally only given to those of royal rank, as she slept in a silver bed in a room adorned with gold wallpaper. The house's classical portico is believed to be one of the first to be built in England, and is said to owe much to the design of the one built for St Paul's Church in London's Covent Garden. The house was refaced and extended late in the 18th century, and the exterior belongs to this Georgian period. George Bridges married the Countess of Shrewsbury, who is always referred to as notorious, because she is supposed to have disguised herself as a page and held the horse of her lover, the Duke of Buckingham, when he fought a duel with her husband. No one knows exactly when the first dwelling was established, but the estate is said to have existed as long ago as AD 961, when Edgar, King of the Angles, is recorded as giving the house and five manses to Winchester Cathedral. At one point, Avington was acquired by Sir John Shelley, younger brother of the poet, and remained in the family until 1952. Still privately owned, Avington House is now used for corporate events, as a film and television location, and as a venue for weddings, as well as photographic fashion shoots, and for falconry demonstrations. And with that, we have a very nice picture of a falconer, a close-up of him with his bird, and also a lovely view of the front of Avington House.
Fields Past Secrets. A field in Alresford, soon to be the new pitches for the town rugby club, has been yielding its secrets from the past. Metal detectorists have been prowling Westfield near Albury Park before rugby club levels for pitches for the new year. A formal agreement requires them to hand in any items found with anything of historical importance going to the Alresford Museum Trust. So far recovered have been King George II coins from the 18th century, lead seals, 18th century weights, and a small metal flask.
Concern over disability benefit tests. More than 8,500 people face being stripped of their disability benefits because of tough new tests. The controversial automated assessment is designed to weed out bogus claimants. But critics say it is unreliable and an appalling way to treat disabled people. Latest figures show that across the South, 5,350 tests have so far judged 1,500 people to be fit to work without any support. There are about 31,000 people claiming incapacity benefit or its replacement, employment support allowance across Hampshire and Southampton Council areas. In Winchester, 24% of those on incapacity benefit have so far been told to get a job, 26% in Test Valley and 26% in Eastleigh. The initial results published by Fareham MP and Employment Minister Mark Hoban suggest that 8,600 of the 31,000 claimants in Hampshire will be told to find work once the full testing process has been completed. The work capability assessments carried out by French company Atos were introduced by Labour in 2008 as an attempt to check whether people applying for disability benefits were in fact capable of work. The coalition government then expanded them to existing claimants. Critics also say they failed to identify mental health conditions, and there has also been a high success rate in appeals against the test results.
Church's bid for new community centre. A Winchester church wants to revamp its site to provide a new community centre. St Barnabas Church in Fromond Road, Week, is in talks with the city and county councils to improve its parish hall and community rooms. The project would also include a new children's play area and more parking at the rear of the church, which serves Harestock, Takedown and Barton Farm. The Reverend Philip Cochrane, parish vicar, said he was in talks with the city and county councils over the project, but that it was at a very early stage. He said, "As a growing church, we have a renewed vision to better serve the people living and working in these suburbs. But the size and quality of our buildings is limiting. It's all early doors at the moment. The church is supportive of the idea, so we have involved the city and county councils who are going through their internal processes. The Reverend Cochrane added the project was not related to North Winchester Your Community Action's plans for a new community centre in Wick. He added, "We want to help enhance community facilities in Wick. We are not trying to get in the way of what they are trying to do, and we wish them well." Architects Snug Projects said it was working with the church on the new building, but Director Paul Bulkley said, "It's in its very early stages, and there has been no consultation with the public yet."
School's plea for road safety measures. A head teacher has made a heartfelt plea to county chiefs to improve road safety near her school and save lives. Janice Bernard, head of Perrin School in Alresford, said the extremely busy junction at Jacqueline's Lane and West Street was the main pedestrian access to the school. Yet it was a completely blind corner, so pupils trying to cross the road could not see around it and had to dodge between cars, buses and lorries. Speaking to a meeting of the full council in Winchester last week, Mrs. Bernard quoted a pupil who said a few simple measures could save lives. She appealed to the council to act quickly. Councillors heard pupils had already come up with ideas to improve road safety, including hatching and a raised hump in the middle of the road to slow traffic. Other proposals, including a wider pavement and a flashing sign to warn drivers there was a school nearby. Mrs. Bernard asked to meet the Transport Chief, Councillor Mel Kendall, and Director of Transport, Stuart Jarvis, in a bid to resolve the problem. Watching from the public gallery of the council chamber were five Perrins pupils: Ross Hunter, 14, Ben Pape, 15, Elisa Expelry, 14, India Gilmore, 14, and Douglas Wicks, 15.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. I hope a problem with one of our microphones didn't spoil your enjoyment of the early part of the recording. But thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thank you to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.